Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2017 Home Education Conference, held in Logan, Utah.
Good afternoon. Aloha. See, that people know that one. I'm standing really close to you. And the frowns scoot back to make you feel a little more secure. I feel really honored to be here. I have so many great friends that are here, and it's kind of like coming back to a world that I haven't been in a while, and I just feel really happy to be here. I'm especially excited to teach youth and adults at the same time. That means I have to be funny and wise at the same time. And we're gonna give it a shot. I want to start off by sharing with you a story. There was a day, I was actually working at the time, I was working for Williamsburg Academy. How many of you go to Williamsburg Academy or participate in that somehow? Some of you, I expected more cheers, but that's okay. So I was working at Williamsburg Academy. This is back before there was an online school. I was a high school, I was a principal of a small campus. I was commuting about an hour to and from. Now, adults, how many of you know that there's a stage in your brain where you click in on a long drive where you're kind of conscious, but you're kind of not conscious? Anybody willing to admit that in front of your teens? All right, so I was driving home in the kind of the glaze. I was driving, but it was just been a long day. I get a call from my wife, ring, ring. The call comes in and essentially she says, "Would you pick up some milk from the store?" Not an uncommon day. I come out of the glaze long enough to receive message, back right into the glaze, and I'm cruising home. Now, the only thing that starts to frustrate me is I recognize that the only store between me and my home is a gas station. And have you ever bought milk at a gas station? And it's like $82 a gallon. And you're just like annoyed. You're like, this is highway robbery. Like, you know you're being like taken advantage of. So I'm feeling frustrated. I park the car, get out of the car, walk into the grocery store. I'm feeling all grumbly. I get the milk and I wander out. I hit it. I put it on the counter and I have some like conversation, but there's no consciousness with the person behind the counter. Like, how's it going? Good. All right. That'd be $4.95. Right. We walk back out to the car. I get to the car. I go to open the door of my car. And do you ever have a moment where you were kind of asleep and then you wake up like splash of water on the face where all of a sudden the glaze is gone and you're now aware? And it's more like when your kids jump on you and when you've been asleep and they come in and they land on you. And right? You have one of those moments. I had one of those moments. I opened the car door and in my car, there is a large, fat man sitting in my car. Now, you know, like this row will understand this. Most of this row. This row will understand this. They understand that when you imagine yourself facing a situation like this, you think to yourself you're going to be more James Bond and less kind of Barney, right? You're thinking I'm going to be the guy who's like, "What are you doing in my car, punk?" And you're going to pull him out, right? You think you're going to be that guy. I was not that guy. And I'm trying, because I'm just frozen in kind of fear slash waking up out of a nap. It was some weird blend of those two things. And I look at the guy, and he's kind of looking up at me. And he has the funniest look on his face, like he'd been caught. Like, I don't know what the face is. I'm going to make a face. Right? There's some face, and I'm looking at him, and I'm trying to think of what to say. And then it finally occurs to me what I should say. And I look at him, and I say, now the thing is, here's the thing. How many of us can, at least at some point in our lives, identify with the idea of going through life in a glaze? Where maybe one day we just kind of go through the motions. We kind of check it, we kind of check out a little bit. We don't quite maybe fully engage. To my teenage friends, We were at a day where it was like, you know what? I'm just going to go through the motions today and try to be on Facebook as often as possible. Anybody relate to that? Wait, your parents don't let you on Facebook. That's okay. But does that make sense? You're just like, I'm going to just kind of check out today, and I'm going to go through the motions and be in the glaze. And for us adults, it happens to us too. It doesn't stop. Where if you look back at the last 8 days, they all kind of seem the same. And we're just kind of going through the motions, maybe not making a lot of progress in our lives. So there I was, I turned to him, and I said, "This isn't my car." And I closed the door, because what else are you doing? I was like, And then I have to make the walk of shame. Now here's the thing that is the walk of shame, because it wasn't the same make, wasn't the same model, it wasn't even the same color. And I had opened the door and I'd said, "Oh, look, there's a bad man in my car," and I'd freaked out and he'd panic. He thought he was getting carjacked by a guy with a gallon of milk, and I'm walking down to get in my car. Now, my car wasn't close, mind you. It wasn't like the one next door. It was like in a different section of the parking lot. And so I walked down to my car, and I get in my car, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm such an idiot. I can't believe I just don't." And then I start thinking to myself, he's probably calling the cops right now. Like, he's, oh my goodness. So I'm trying to peek up. Now, this is like, if you've been caught as a kid and you know what this is, it's like, I want to see if he noticed. Like, I think he noticed, but I want to see his reaction. I want to see if he's chasing it. I don't know what's going on, but I don't want to make eye contact. Right? I want to avoid eye contact at all costs. And so I kind of peek up, and there he is. And we lock eyes. And I don't know who this guy is, but I wish I could find him someday, because he turns to me and he just goes, "Good job, buddy." And I'll tell you what, my message today is about finding your inner light. And I have a job that's called being a dream manager. And I know it sounds silly and it sounds cheesy and I should work at Disneyland, but it is sort of like being a fairy godmother in a business, but the funny part is that here's what I've discovered. The job description is simple. My job is to help people within my company to identify, articulate, and accomplish dreams. Whatever they are, it doesn't matter. And because I sit in this seat where every day I just kind of go, "What's your dream?" And people will tell me, they'll say, "Well, my dream is, you know, I've always wanted to start a foundation helping mothers with infant loss." Wow. That's inside of you? Oh my goodness. Other people, my dream, I told this to some of the youth this morning, my dream is to own an Xbox One. He was 28 years old and married. And he's still married, so that turned out okay, I guess. Another person, my dream is to help support my ailing parents. Another person, my dream is to kayak in the phosphorescent algae in Puerto Rico, right? And so I get a chance to talk to all these people about all these different varieties of dreams, and I get to learn what that means. I want to start today by teaching you what I define a dream as. Is that okay? Oh, all right. We have one in the front that says no, so we're not going to do that. Man, that was a big part of my presentation. Would it be okay if I? All right. Thank you. All right. So I'm going to start over here, and then we're going to talk about. Because here's the thing that I discovered. We all, as human beings, have a biological propensity to be sort of boring. Some of you are like, "Yeah, you've met my dad before." That's. We all have a biological propensity to be boring. Now, let me tell you why. It's much the same as a deer who wanders down to water. And if the deer wanders down to water and gets water, drinks the water, and then wanders back to its home, and it doesn't die, what path does it take tomorrow? Same path. Down, drink, back. And it does that again and again and again. And eventually what happens? What's created? a path, a little rut in the ground. That rut in the ground over time becomes law, becomes in our brains, it becomes this is the way it should happen. This is the way it needs to happen. This is the way it ought to happen. It's not safe if I do it any other way. That makes sense? Any of you have some of those things? In my family, it's the cars we buy. For generations, the Ralph's family bought fuel-efficient four-door foreign sedans. When I went to the lot and I was like, oh, what kind of car should I buy? I was like, well, I better buy a Honda Civic because that's the most fuel-efficient, most four-door, most boring vehicle that you could ever buy. And then I was like, well, but what if I could buy a Mazda? Right? I'm like, I'm going to really break out of my, I'm going to buy a Mazda. And I called my wife. I'm like, I'm not sure. Right? Somewhere along the line, the rut of four-door fuel-efficient sedans was created, and I was just in it. Now, does it mean it's bad to buy a four-door fuel-efficient sedan? No, but it means I should use my brain and think about whether or not that's the car I really want. That makes sense? But we have a tendency, biological tendency, to be in a rut. I actually call it the humdrum conundrum. That's clever, right? That's kind of clever. All right, so it's a humdrum conundrum. Here's what the humdrum conundrum says. It says we are constantly predicting the future. We're constantly predicting the future, all the time, always. How can we tell we're constantly predicting the future? Because if I threw this pen right now, you would all be surprised. What? Not anymore. All right, I gave you the prediction. But because we can be surprised, we know our brains are going, what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next? We're constantly thinking what's going to happen, right? How do we predict what the future will be? What do we base our predictions on? The past, our experience. In other words, if every speaker always threw pens at people, you'd kind of be ready for it. You'd be like, oh, he threw another pen, no big deal. Pen throwers. Like, it wouldn't be a big deal anymore. But because we don't typically have presenters in the front of the room throw pens at people in the front of the rows, we tend to be surprised by that. Now, here's where the conundrum happens. The conundrum happens in that we tend to act based on our prediction of the future. How many of you have certain meals that are like default meals you always make? And you go, what did we do in the past? Therefore, we'll probably have Cheerios again tonight for dinner. And then when you get home, you kind of do Cheerios again. And then you go, oh, you're kind of that's kind of what we do. And that's what we define as the rut. The rut is something that we kind of fall into. By the way, is the rut good or bad? Yes. Somebody said yes. That's a pretty good answer. Is it good or bad? Yes. Because it's a great part of our humanity that we have a tendency to find rhythms and patterns, and that we can rest on those rhythms and patterns, and that those rhythms and patterns can keep us safe, keep us protected, generally put us in good situations. So there's something really healthy about the fact that we do this, but there's also a limitation, also provides an innate limitation. I read a book recently that I think I would recommend called What Makes Your Brains Happy and Why You Should Do the Opposite. And this is one of those things that makes our brains happy. Our brains love it when it knows what's coming, when it's not surprised or confused. And so a dream, and the reason why we encourage people to dream, the reason why dreaming helps us to find kind of that inner light, that inner kind of fire again, is a dream is simply something out here outside of the rut that is desirable. So it's something you want. How many of you would love to go skydiving? How many of you would never go skydiving? No desire. All right, the no desires win, luckily, because we were going to go skydiving. So we're not going to do that. But, right, so if we don't have the desire, I don't have a desire to go skydiving, that's not a dream for me. But for those of you who have a desire to go skydiving, you're like, yeah, that would be a cool thing. That would be a fun dream. I texted somebody the other day that went skydiving 50 times, and it was like he got his license and everything because it was a dream for him. Now, so it can't be the rut. Now, if you go skydiving every day, then it stops being a dream. Does that make sense? Because now it's a part of the rut. Even if it's skydiving, it's kind of like, well, it's not a big deal anymore. Even skydiving can become mundane. Weird, right? That's why they have to go higher and faster and further, because they're like just jumping out of a plane anymore. That's not a big deal. Man, I can't imagine that. All right. It's desirable. The other part, it has to live in language. So in other words, we have to create words around it. I discovered this the first time when I was doing a session like this. I asked somebody what their dream was. They said, my dream is to drive a tank. And you know, in my head, it started going, and I started chugging, and went, me too. I think that would be very cool to drive. I don't want to kill anyone or be in war. I just want to, like, drive over a car in a tank. That'd be fun. Now, where was the dream before the words, drive a tank? Where was it? Yeah, there's something in me, a subconscious somewhere. There was something in me that kind of had that percolating, but until it formulated into language, it wasn't necessarily something that I could do anything with. And so for us, dreaming, articulating dreams is really important, because part of the dreaming process is being able to give words to, or pictures or images or some form of language to the dream. I talk to a lot of dreamers. I'll say, so tell me about your dream. I want to be more creative. Well, what does that look like? Can you explain that to me? I don't really know. And so do you see how that dream isn't quite a dream yet? It's like you don't really know what you want. You just kind of have doesn't have words yet. We got to put words on it. And then once we have words to it, then we can go do it. Eventually, the same woman who said, I want to go become more creative, we worked on it, and she finally said the words, I want to take a class at the community college in which I learn to blow glass. I was like, that's great. See how that dream has some meat to it? We can understand what that is and what that looks like and how it, and so she gave words to the dream. So a dream is something that's desirable, lives in language. If you want a dream, you start identifying little dots in your life. Some are close, like one of my dreams, and you're going to, can I even confess this in front of a homeschooling crowd? I've never read The Hobbit. Oh, thank you. Whoever said media, it's a safe place now. The guy in the front of the room hasn't read The Hobbit either. I better get it out while we have a chance. So, but one of my dreams is just to read The Hobbit. I'm like interested in that, right? It's not a big deal. It wouldn't take very long. I've already downloaded on my Audible. Like, I just need to go do it. But it's I'd have to get outside of my rut to make that happen, because usually I read business books. I don't read fiction books. And so, but other dreams are big, like dreams like I want to impact the way people think about dreaming and creation. That's a big one, you know? And some seem way far out there and others are closer. But no matter the dream, if I were to pursue it, if I were to go after it, it would require me to leave the rut. It would require me to get outside of the rut that I'm in. So let me ask this question, and I'm going to ask for some youth to help me out with this. If I said, you know what, this is my dream, I want an Xbox, I'm going to go get it, and you go out of your rut, you go create an Xbox. By the way, it only took him like 3 weeks. It's like not a big deal. But he went and got an Xbox. What happens to the rut? I heard somebody say, get bigger. Would you agree to that? It gets bigger, it expands. Yep. The things that once, I had one person say it this way. What those things that used to seem impossible now seem possible. The things that just seem possible now seem probable. The things that seemed probable now seem inevitable. This was somebody who started the dreaming process, started doing those things, started pushing beyond their limits. And over time, they went and discovered more in their lives. And they accomplished this. And the cool part is what happened to this dream? I never actually did. Well, now it's kind of like, wouldn't be a big deal. Like the first time I traveled internationally, I traveled to Johannesburg, South Africa. My wife, then girlfriend at the time, said, it's the most dangerous city in the world, don't go anywhere. Like, just go to the hotel and come back. I was traveling alone. And by the time I got home from Johannesburg, South Africa, if somebody said, all right, I need to go get on a flight to Denver, I would have been like, eh, not a big deal. That make sense? Because our capacity expands, our ability expands, and things that before would have been challenging now seem kind of within our scope. By the way, this is the process of growing up, youth. This is the process of growing up and growing older. When I was a freshman in high school, the thought of kissing a girl was like, ah! And now it's just nice, but not a big deal. You know what I mean? I still like it, but, right? And so in other words, we expand our circle of influence and we grow. I want to share this story again. I'm sorry to the youth I was chatting with earlier, but I like this story. My friend with the Xbox, he came back after he had his Xbox. And I said, man, congratulations, you got your Xbox. And I said, so what's next? I said, maybe there's a little ego involved, but I'm like, I'm a good dream manager. You got to step it up. That Xbox stuff isn't really challenging my dream management skills. So I want you to think of a dream that would be just take a miracle, one that would be like way beyond your capacity. Because here's the thing, because of the rut, we believe this is reasonable. We believe that this is normal, this is acceptable, this is possible. All this stuff out here is like fairy tale stuff. This is like miracles. This is like it's just, we don't believe in this stuff because the history of our past, the volume of information in our past binds us so that we can't really imagine a different future. If you grew up poor, this is why there's such a poverty cycle. If I grow up poor, man, all of my past says poverty. All of the evidence in my life that says, are you poor or rich, says poor. And so for me to imagine rich is really hard. I don't have a lot to hang on to. That if somebody, like, if somebody says, are you rich or poor? In your brain, if it says rich or poor, you go, ah, I'm sort of poor. Because all of my past experience says poor. And so I said, all right, so I know your past says Xbox, but what's the miracle? What would just be impossible? And he said, you know what? And he got a little bit more serious. And whenever you're talking about a meaningful dream, it gets a little bit more meaning. It kind of takes a different tone. And he said, you know, my wife and I have been talking about having some kids. I said, and she lets you play the Xbox? I said, we're thinking about having some kids, and we both work to pay the bills. And I'd really like to go to my wife and tell her that she didn't have to work anymore. And I said, how much? He said, double. You need to double your income? Yeah. Well, I'm the dream manager. That's how much you need, not how much you want. I'm not the need manager, I'm the dream manager. So how much do you want? He was like, triple? And I said, all right, you want to triple your income? By when? And he said, well, like when my wife and I talk about it, it's like within the year. And even I am going at that point, all right, let's tone it down a little. Because my history, my past, is inhibiting my ability to believe something about the future. Now, it doesn't mean we toss away the past. It doesn't mean it doesn't have any validity. It just means that we have to recognize that it's not scientific fact. Does scientific fact prohibit someone from tripling their income in a year? No. My experience prohibits me from believing that. Not any principle of truth. And so I said, all right, let's try it. What do we have to lose? And we got to work, and he worked hard. He invested a lot. And he walked into the darkness saying, I'm going to go do this for himself, for his family. 12 months later, we met. I said, how's it coming? Where are you at? Do you think you made it? No. It would have made a much better story if he did. But here's what he said. He said, I'm $100 shy a month of tripling my income. And I said, man, you need to pay me more. No, I just congratulate him. I'm so happy for him. And then he turns to me and he goes, I don't play the Xbox very much anymore. You see, it's funny. We get stuck in our brains about this. And I'll tell you how I can tell someone who's out of the rut and on the path. I want to talk about, in the last, you know, half of the session today, how you get out of the rut and off of the path. And this is a unique session. I noticed some of the youth didn't sit by their parents because they are embarrassed by you. But I just want to say that this is a partnership. This is the most important partnership of all between youth and parents. And here's why. Youth, your parents want more than anything for you to be successful. That's what they want. They're dying for your success. Some of them literally. Like gray hairs, disease. They're dying for you to be successful. Don't point at anyone's hair. Right? Adults, can you nod at that? Can you say, yes, we want more than anything to make you successful. We want more than anything for you to light up when we see you. We want more than anything that when you're 25 and 30 and 55 years old, that your life is full and rich and happy and you just feel like you're on fire with life and your eyes light up. And you know what I mean, light up? It's hard to describe, but you see it when someone's doing it. The best place you can see the light up, the click, the inflow, the, I don't even know what to call it. It doesn't have a name yet. We should name it. What should we call it? All right. They don't know. I don't know either. But have you ever seen a great musician? Like a great musician. And they're just on stage and they're in flow and they're jamming and they're like smiling, but it's almost like a romance, right? They're just in love with what they do. Have you ever seen that? And it's like a light goes on inside of them and it just shines bright. Now, I've also seen that same, you're not gonna believe me, I've seen that same light go on when someone was working with Excel spreadsheets. And they were like, oh, and then you can pivot table. It's so great. And you know who you are. Some of you are that way. You're like, oh man, it's so fun. I've seen people eyes light up, right? When they've been doing all kinds of things. So youth, your parents want you to feel that way about life. They want your eyes to light up. And I know that some of you think your parents are dream crushers. And by the way, some of you parents are dream crushers. And here's why you're dream crushers. And youth, here's why they're crushing your dreams. This is why. You are leaving the path. And that scares them. It freaks them out. They're like, oh, la, 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 la. Don't go the path, I want to see the road. Don't die, right? The only thing that keeps them from wanting you to, your success is wanting not you to die. They just don't want you to die. Other than that, they want your success. Don't die and be successful. Those are the two mantras of the parent. But inevitably, parents and youth leaving the rut, especially if the youth are leaving the parents' rut, is scary. Because this is known and familiar. This is unknown and unfamiliar. We're just scared of the dark, everyone. We're just scared of the dark. And usually it's not anything real. Usually it's all imagined. Just like my 8-year-old who wants the light on to go to sleep. We're just scared of the dark. So in this last kind of chunk, I want to talk about how we get there. Now, parents, the good news is your youth, more than anything, want to live a life that's meaningful. They want to live a life where they feel proud, where they make you proud. And so do you see this cool parallel where parents are dying? I should stop using that phrase. Parents are living. They're living to make the youth successful. And the youth want nothing more than to live successful lives where they can feel proud and confident. There's no reason that you two shouldn't be lockstep partners in this process. But parents, you're going to have to get over your own fears. And now that I'm a parent, I understand it's the scariest thing in the world. Man, to let my kid go to the corner, freaking me out. And youth, you're going to have to get over your own egos and be humble and teachable. And when that happens, we're going to see good things happen. All right, that was a little tangent, just because I love when parents or youth are together and I can call the adults old. It's so fun. All right, so number one, here's the process. I'm going to give you some steps. Step number one is become a genius watcher. Become a genius watcher. What does that mean? I want you, if you want to get good at dreaming, if you want to get good at turning on the light in the people around you, parents, if you want to get good at turning on the light in your youth, if you want to figure out what your light is, to find your inner light, you have to recognize light when you see it. To find your inner light, you have to recognize light when you see it. And so what you do is you just become, how many of you are already people watchers? Yeah, you're kind of people watchers. You know how you are. You're like the grocery store, you're eyeing everybody. You want to notice the cashier at the grocery store who is in, whose light is turned on. Bing, bing. Hey, how's it going? Welcome. You know, like, you met that grocer. They're like, va-da-da, right? Hey, good to see you. Oh, look, watch this behind the back, right? They're like, their light is turned on. You want to notice that. Because all of us have a native genius. All of us have something that comes easily and freely. Easily. It just kind of comes natural. We hardly even notice we're doing it. This is why we have to notice it in others before we can understand or recognize it in ourselves. Because we're kind of like where, what is it? Fish discover water last. We're kind of the people, like the person who's like lights up with Excel spreadsheets, they're like, oh, that's so, that's everybody likes Excel. And you're like, no. No, we don't. No one else likes Excel, right? But they don't notice that. They don't notice that everyone else doesn't light up with Excel. Like, it's funny because even with my, like, even as I've been trying to figure out my inner light, I remember one day I was sitting next to my wife and she's like, Dan, I have to teach this class. I think it was a primary class. I can say that here. And she goes, I don't know what to do. I'm like, come on, you do too. Stop wimping out and give me your work. And she's like, no, like I need your help. And I was being, I don't know, I was probably watching basketball or something. And so I was being annoyed. And I turned to her and I'm like, you just ba-ba-da, and then you ba-da-da, and then you da-da-da-ba-da, and then you do one of those, and boop-ba, it's done. And she's like, wow, that was really good. And I'm like, no, it wasn't. It's just what people do. You just go through and you put together an hour-long course. It's not a big, oh, wait, that's really easy for me. And that's not easy for her. And that doesn't mean she's dumb or lazy. It just means this is my native genius. We could do the reverse and I could tell 100 stories of the things that are her native genius and not mine. Like, we would not pay bills. Like, there are a lot of things that for her come so easily and naturally and that for me are such a struggle. And so you want to look around. You want to identify and find out people whose light are turned on and who are on fire with life. Right? Who just is, they're in it. They're in flow. And it doesn't happen like they're in the right career necessarily. It can mean just in that moment, they're there. Parents, do you kind of, have you seen those moments with your kids where their eyes are alive and it's different for all the different kids? My daughter, Emma. Emma, why don't you stand up? Emma, can you just come up here actually? Would you feel too scared to do that? All right, so this is my daughter, Emma. Everyone give her a round of applause. And here's what I love about Emma. I mentioned this in one of my other classes. One day she comes into our bedroom and she turns to my wife and she says, can I organize your closet? Like as if she were asking like the biggest favor in the world. Do you like to clean and organize? And what's your favorite thing to clean? The floor. And why do you like cleaning?
Because sometimes it's fun, like, to make up new ways to clean.
Sometimes it's fun to make up new ways to clean. That was perfect. You can go sit down. Thank you, sweetheart. Don't you wish you had her in your in your family? Sometimes it's fun to just make up new ways to clean. And here's the thing. Do you see the genius in that? Do you see her light? She lights up about it. And so we want to become genius watchers. We want to observe the genius in the people around us. We want to name it when we see it. So we have some, like, you know, Eskimos have like 20-something words for ice, and we have only one word for genius. We need to start naming it different things, recognizing that special blend some people have about of being peaceful and kind. And just like, they have this ease about the way they move around their day. We want to recognize the people who are just bold and confident and fearless. We want to recognize the people who have just a great sense of humor and just can laugh and laugh all day. All right, that makes sense? So number one, we got to be genius watchers. We got to start recognizing native genius wherever we find it so that we can understand and identify where light happens. Number two, we have to eliminate darkness. We won't find our light if we're hanging out in darkness. We won't find our light if we're hanging out in darkness. And this isn't exclusive to the youth. I remember one poor mother that came to me and she said, "Dan, I don't know what to do. I want to raise my kids to be leaders. How can I possibly do that when my husband plays violent video games all day?" And I said, "You know what? I don't know." And how sad, right? Some of you, like, initially I judged and I was like, we take him out behind the shed. We take care of it. Then we throw him back in and he'll be just, right? So I kind of felt that a little bit at first. And then I just felt sad. The reason so often we seek darkness, we find things in our lives that we appreciate as darkness, is because we're afraid of the light. We're afraid of this dream. We're afraid that it might be real. We're afraid of our success. We're afraid that if I go out here, I'm going to have to give up all this. And darn it, I like video games. Any of you like video games? Yeah, everyone's afraid to admit it now. Everyone's like, maybe. But we got to eliminate darkness in our lives. And if it's video games, we got to eliminate video games. If it's watching too much TV, we got to eliminate watch too much TV. That's mine. If it's the wrong people, if it's negative influences, if it's negative friends, we got to eliminate those things from our lives, or else we're never going to be able to see the rich light within our own lives. Because light and darkness can't exist at the same time. The next thing is we have to expose ourselves to great things. So initially, I don't really care which dream you go after because I just want you to go after dreams. I just want you to go after stuff. I don't care if it's the thing, it just has to be a thing. And I want you to go find something that just makes you excited. Sierra shared his story earlier. I won't have you come up, Sierra, but Sierra, one of our youth at our conference here today, I said, "How many of you know what your thing is? Like what your light, what lights you up?" And she said, "You know, I have a really interesting story about that. For the longest time when I was growing up, I wanted to be a vet. I thought that was going to be what I was going to do. And in fact, I even got an internship and I got a chance to go work in a veterinary clinic. I was working in a veterinary clinic and this dog came in. It was just a precious dog. The owner loved it. My role was to be with the dog as it went through the surgery and to make sure that the dog, you know, was in as little pain as possible. And the dog died in my lap." And she said, "You know, when I went through that, I realized I don't think I could do this. I don't think this is the thing for me. It's too emotional. It's too hard." Man, she couldn't, like, do you see how valuable that is for her as she's chasing to figure out what her inner light is? How educational that is in her ability to understand her inner light? How that kind of teaches her so much about her and what lights her up and what doesn't, what's hard and what's fun, what's cool? Because I think there would have been some people that would have been like, "Man, I want to be in these moments. This is meaningful to me." And for her, it was like, "Nah, this isn't what I was meant to be, what I was meant to do." And so in order for us to do this, we have to go expose ourselves to great things. Now, the hard part about exposing ourselves to great things is it means that as parents, we have to leave the rut. It doesn't mean we need to spend a lot of money. It doesn't mean we need to do crazy things, but we have to leave the rut. Because if we're going to expose our kids are getting exposed to our rut, and if we want to expose them to more things, we have to leave the rut. So we're going to have to go try the Indian food when we're more meat and potatoes person. We're going to have to go try the orchestra when we're more a Star Wars fan. We're going to have to go try new things. We're going to have to try living a little city when we're country. We're going to have to try being a little country when we're city. If we want to expose our children to the things that will eventually light them up, and if we expose them to enough things, I'm guaranteeing it, there's going to be something that they're going to go, oh, can we do that again? And it'll light them up. The next piece is we have to live what lights you up. This is for the parents. This is for the parents. I remember I was sitting on the couch with my mother, and I was probably 25. My brother was probably 27. My sister would have been just like 17, 18. And my mom turns to me and she said this. She said, you know what? I think I'm going to go on a cruise. And the reason that was shocking to me is because my mother had never been on a cruise. She'd never really traveled. And in her own brain, she's going through this too. I see it on her face. She's going, why haven't I ever been on a cruise? I love the idea of going on a cruise. And then she goes, and almost just to herself, she said, I guess I've been thinking about my kids first for the last 25 years. Huh. And at first, I had the moment of like, oh my goodness. That adult realization where you're like, oh, my mom is awesome. Oh my goodness, she sacrificed her whole life for me. A month before she died, 6 weeks before she died, she went to Hawaii and swam with dolphins. And as I look back on that, I have two emotions. One, I have this overwhelming emotion of gratitude. Like how incredible that a mother would sacrifice her whole life for me. The other emotion I feel is, I wish she would have gone on more cruises. I think I would have grown up okay. Not only do I wish she would have gone on more cruises, I think I wish that I would have learned something from my mother that it was okay to go on cruises. That life was, there was adventure in life and it was okay to go pursue it. I remember one day I shared a presentation. I used to travel a lot more. I used to be all over the world speaking. And I came and I told my kids, I said, I did a PowerPoint presentation much like this. I said, all right, kids, sit down. I'm going to do a PowerPoint presentation. To he who is good with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And so I said, all right, I'm going to do a PowerPoint presentation. And I did a PowerPoint presentation. And I wanted to show them that where I was going and what I was doing and why I was not home sometimes. Because I wanted them to understand that Ralphs do big things. Man, and I do things that light me up, and I do things that I care about, and I do things that I'm passionate about. And we do things in the service of others. And if I never model that, especially as the man of the family, if I never model that, then my kids are going to have a rut that's narrow rather than broad. And so I'm interested in making the rut broad. Now, let me talk to the handful of you who are perfectionists and now beating yourself up because you're not doing more of this. Again, this is meant to be joyful. This is about what lights you up. This isn't about someone what lights someone else up. Don't think, oh, I better go book a cruise. That's not what I'm saying. You go book a cruise if a cruise lights you up. And maybe it's not a cruise. My mom could have gone to the ocean more. There are other things. It's not the money thing. Some of you are getting stuck on the money. By the way, if your dream requires money, what's the first step of the dream? Make more money. You're like, but I can't do that. Well, that's your rut. All right, sorry, I got a little serious there. But the moral of the story is, go find something that lights you up, even if it's small. Have your kids catch you doing karaoke in your room. I don't know what it is. Whatever it is that lights you up. For my mom, she was perfect at living a life that was lit up. Her joy, I still remember this. She got a kick. In fact, she would have said, I got tickled. She was like, I was just so tickled. And she would throw a beach ball into the ocean and it would come back. And she was like, did you see that? The ball came back. Isn't that great? And she would throw it out again and it would come back. And she would throw it out again, and it would come back. And in the light and in the engagement, she raised a dream manager. Does that make sense? So when we light, when we share things that light us up, when we live a life that lights us up, then, right, our children will light up too. The next and final thing is to be surrounded by greatness. Way to be here. Way to be here and surrounded by great people and great speakers. James Yore from Williamsburg County, he's a great man, right? The people who are here and we're surrounding ourselves with are great people. And in order, again, for us to convince the rut in us that we are capable of something different, we have to surround ourselves with people who are perhaps further out, who are maybe a little down the path from us. So we can begin to see what it looks like. We can begin to believe that perhaps we could be it too. Because then we're drawn up. We're pulled up by the people around us. There's an old saying in business that says, your net income is this average of the five people you spend the most time with. And I think there's probably some real truth to that. Or just rich people like hanging out with rich people. I don't know. But I think there's also truth in the fact that we are the sum total, meaning our ability to dream and our ability to go create is probably connected by the people that we spend the most time with. And so I'm going to just invite you, go find the person in your life, youth and adults alike, that inspires you. Somebody who just like just goes, man, I want to be more like that person. They're just an inspiring person. And then what you do is you say, hi, inspiring person. Can I buy you lunch? People love lunch. Most people eat it every day. Right? And so you say, hey, can you do lunch? And it's like, yeah, great. I can't tell you, I've had a handful of youth in my life who've come up to me and said, Dan, can we just hang out more? Yeah. And we chat, we talk, we do stuff. We don't hang out, but we talk on the phone, right? So we want to surround ourselves with greatness. Parents, go find the people that inspire you the most and have them have lunch with your kids, right? Say, hey, we're going to go out to dinner with a friend of mine. Free ice cream if you're coming. Let's go hang out. And you want to get them in the mode of being inspired by greatness. By the way, greatness is not necessarily living people. It also can be people who have passed on. Let them hang out with Gandhi and Lincoln and Churchill. Watch their original stuff. Every Martin Luther King Jr. day, I watch the full speech of Martin Luther King Jr. because I want to get a feel and a sense of what greatness feels like. So surround yourself with greatness. One of my biggest worries as I teach dreaming is that dreaming will make people selfish. For a long time, I've been really concerned about that. I've been worried that if I teach people how to go create a life, that they can go out and create a life that they want. And you know how dreams go. What are the first dreams we think of? Own a Tesla. That's number one. Number two, right? It's like, it's kind of selfish stuff a little bit. But I don't think, I'm still on the edge on this one, but I don't think that when we get in the mode of creating and abundance, that it leads to more selfishness. I don't think so. I think the selfish one is the one who's hunkered down in their rut. I think the selfish one is the one who's afraid to go outside. I think the selfish one is the one who's holding in their light, afraid to share it with the world. In our family growing up, we had a family motto, and it was pulled from the Bible, and it was, let your light so shine, right? That famous scripture in Matthew, don't put your light under a bushel, but put it on a what? A candlestick, that it giveth light unto all that are in the house. So my invitation to you is to put your light on a candlestick so that everyone can joy in your light. Thank you, guys.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.